Hello and welcome to the Daily News Podcast, Making a City. My name is Ann Brennan and I'm Editor-in-Chief of the Metro West Daily News and the Milford Daily News. And I'm here with Jim Hadadine.
Hi, Ann.
Who covers the city of Framingham. Today we will be interviewing Framingham Mayor Yvonne Spicer, who we hope will become a regular visitor to our podcast every month. Welcome, Madam Mayor.
Thank you, Ann, for having me.
I'll let Jim start off with the questions.
So thanks very much for joining us. We really appreciate it. As Ann said, you know, we're hoping to kind of do these sessions when we can schedule them with you to check in on, you know, how things are developing in the city and some of the issues that are out there. So one thing we did want to follow up on is these storms that we all just endured. It was
a pretty tough winter for us so far. So right out of the door, 48 hours in on the job, and we had our first of a few other storms. I think we were up to about four by this point. But we dodged a bullet last week, so I was really happy about that. But it wasn't as bad as it had predicted, and hopefully we're done.
Yeah, as we sit down today, it's like in the 50s outside. It's you can kind of feel spring in the air. So
absolutely.
That's nice.
And, you know, and this is the other thing. The next part of that is the kind of assessing and the cleanup of our city.
Yeah. I wanted to ask, I'm looking at the numbers from the folks at the DPW. March 7th, 13 inches of wet, heavy snow. People probably remember that one as the kind of the most serious impact for Framingham. And then less than a week later, March 13th, 23 inches of more snow, which was just a lot of shoveling for folks, kind of less damage from the trees and the wind, but still, you know, a lot to deal with.
It was.
So what was it like out of your house? You're up.
Well, on the heavy wet snow, I did lose power for 3 days, and along with a number of my neighbors, and you know we managed to get through it. But certainly at one point we felt that we needed to open the shelter because of the cold temperatures at night, but making sure that people had a warm place to be and a warm meal. And the good news is that even though we didn't have a whole lot of takers for the shelter, it was available for our community. So, you know, and that also speaks to the fact that people in our community take care of each other. So that was a good feeling to know that everyone was cared for. And with all of the storms happening, no one was hurt. And that was one of the most important things to me.
Yeah. So I was kind of curious. I've never spent a storm inside the storm center or this kind of like emergency operations center that the city has. Where is that?
Well, but first of all, the EOC is at the police station on the third floor of the police station. But at DPW, there is a situation room where you can actually see where the trucks are, what zones they're covering for the snow cleanup. And also, you can see the cameras, too, because we can see where the trucks are and what's happening on various intersections throughout the city. So DPW has a pretty well-run operation, and it's always a pleasure to go and see how things are going and get out there on the road to see what it's like to be out there cleaning, too. So,
I'm just curious, too, what were your conversations with Eversource and the utilities as the power outages lasted over 3 days?
Well, part of that was a period of time where we didn't have we had a bit of a breakdown in communication, and they acknowledged it and you know, and apologized for it because we did an internal assessment of what happened and what was our response. And the only thing that we probably would have done differently, we would have opened the shelter a day earlier if we had known Eversource wasn't going to work through the night to restore power. But I think overall, they did a great job given the fact that, you know, it was power outages across the Metro West region. So, you know, they just don't have the crews to deal with the situation.
Can I just ask, I mean, we've heard about this kind of breakdown in communication with Eversource, but I think maybe people are kind of wondering, like, in practical terms, like, what does that mean? What happened during that time that made it difficult for Eversource to either keep the crews in the city or...
Right. Well, you know, and I think contractually, they had to have a rest. I mean, some of these crews were working, 12, 14 hours, and I think contractually, they have to give them a rest. And also, it was getting dark. It's hard to work in the dark. It just really made it a very treacherous situation for the workers. And the part of the breakdown in the communication, we just did not know they were pulling all the crews off at 7 o'clock. We thought they were going to continue, and that piece of information was not communicated to our director of the Emergency Operations Center.
This was that like Thursday night of the storm or
yes.
Friday night?
Yes, it was the Friday night because we would have opened the center on Friday and we ultimately opened that Saturday.
Gotcha. So what's it, have you talked to the head honcho at Eversource?
Oh, yes, I have. Yes, indeed. We have talked several times. And, you know, one of the things that is really good is that as a result of this, we're going to come together to reassess where we can go in the future. How can we do better planning? How can we have better communication? Certainly by that second storm, we definitely had ongoing communication on a regular basis with Eversource. And we were up to date where power was out. And one of the things I made a plea to the residents, if you are in a situation where you're out of power, you know, the best place to call is the Emergency Operations Center, because I know some of our residents were calling their respective leadership, their councilmen, and just making sure that all of the information is centered through the Emergency Operations Center so we know where there's the power outage and we can get help there sooner than later.
So right now I think a lot of residents are looking around at their properties in the wake of these storms and people still have a lot of brush to deal with.
Yes.
Have people been calling you about that or what have you been hearing from folks?
Well,
about
we certainly have heard that people were concerned about all of the brush, and this is it's an unusual storm. And we're trying to see if we can make the decision to do an early brush pickup in our community. It is certainly, from a budgetary standpoint, it is going to impact our budget where it'll exceed DPW's budget. And so we are going forth with a request to the city council to expend these funds. And, you know, and we tried to do an estimate of what it would cost to clean up our city and pick up a brush. And we're going to ask the city council for the funds in order to make that happen.
So I guess the issue is they actually filled the yard waste drop-off area on Dudley Road, so that just in terms of the city going around and picking up what was out there on the streets and they really needed to clean up, it's something like 20,000 cubic yards worth of material is now there waiting to be offloaded somehow.
Yes. And this was even during the storm, you know, we had fallen trees in the roadways that had to be moved in order to restore the power. And so in the brush and the limbs. And so DPW had done their due diligence already with just cleaning the roadways. And it has definitely impacted our budget, but also the taxing of the human resources. I mean, our DPW team has been working around the clock in order to not only clean up from the storms, but also continue to maintain the roads and trash pickup and recycling. All of that is still going on. And, you know, my hat goes off to them because they really have been doing yeoman's work.
I'd like to move on to the advisory boards. You just appointed some people to the traffic committee. So what do you hope that they're going to achieve? What are some of the priorities that you have?
Well, the interesting thing about this process of appointing boards and commissions is that, according to the charter, that a number of these boards and positions are under my purview to appoint. So it's really, in some cases, developing a process for the appointments and a process that is equitable but also achieves the goals that we want, which is a diverse group of people representing the city of Framingham. And so the Traffic Commission, my latest appointees, there were some very prescriptive things that had to happen. One had to live within the intersection, within a mile of the intersection of 126 and 135. Another had to be a business owner, and then the other two could be at large. And so they'll work in collaboration with our city employees as well. And this, and I also chose people that tried to represent a good perspective of Framingham. So that was another good portion of it. My hope is that they come up with some really good ideas to mitigate traffic and congestion. What are those things that we need to be thinking clearly about? Should we have speed bumps in some locations? Do we need a traffic light or some type of mitigation, particularly in various hot spots throughout our city? are there some ways to get around the timing of traffic? Because we know certain times of the day are a lot busier than others, such as, you know, when the buses are rolling for school in the morning and in the afternoon. Is there a way to think about staggering openings of businesses in order to accommodate? So it, you know, would be helpful to kind of look at all of those possibilities to create more bike lanes. Do we need to do that? Do we think about other alternative ways of transporting our residents throughout the city, improving our services around the community on the bus? So that's another possible option. So I'm looking forward to them getting together and getting to work. Right now I have sent the list of appointees to the council for their final approval.
So it looks like one of the next bodies that's going to get some appointments is the planning board. I think there's a date of next week when those people, an appointment is due, or what's the timeline for that?
Well, typically, when we put out these positions, they're up for like 30 days. But if we have enough applicants to be able to start interviewing people and hopefully appoint some people, we'll do it sooner than later. And I had to kind of rattle the bushes, so to speak, to get people to apply for the planning board. And so right now we're in the process of, we have some more applicants, which is great, and scheduling some interview time with them, because similar to the licensing board, these are entities that have the ability to issue licenses and permits. And so, you know, I think there has to be a ad hoc kind of process where I have instead of just me appointing people, have an ad hoc committee that will review the applicants and try to make sure that we have applicants that bring some skill sets that we might need, because being on the planning board is a very, arduous task, because they do meet regularly. And it's also good if someone has some skill sets in urban planning, engineering, architecture, design. That would be very helpful. So we're right in the process of vetting those applicants and hopefully be able to make an appointment very soon.
Yeah, that is a very busy board. That, like, sometimes I'll look and they'll have like 3 meetings in a week. And these are long meetings where they get into a lot of technical detail about the projects that are going on in the city. So definitely an important job for whoever's coming in. Do you have at least, 2 people who are interested at this point?
Well, we do have 2, at least. Okay. 2, as I rattled the bushes there. And then, of course, more people started to apply. So, I'm confident that we'll pick some great candidates for this role. And as I said from the onset, when people are not selected for one board, I do hope they will continue to apply, that they just don't give up and say, oh, well, I'm not going to get appointed to anything, because there's still more boards that need to be appointed. And I started with the more challenging boards first and foremost. But there are more positions and more opportunities for people to participate.
I did want to ask what we can look for after the planning board, if there's a sequence to boards that are going to be filled out, or kind of how this appointment procedure will carry out.
Yeah.
So I know I'm also a little confused as to what the charter says kind of needs to happen. I had the sense maybe there's this date in June or July where people are either in their positions or reappointed to their positions. But can you talk a little bit about how that process will work?
Absolutely. The charter, Chapter 10, I do believe it's Section I or J, that speaks to that everyone's board appointments technically ends June 30th of this year, 2018. And one of the things, and that's a very daunting situation, especially people that have served for a while, what I have done within my office is gone through all of the board positions. Because one of the things that we never had was a full description of the boards and how often they meet. So I've had my team actually work on those descriptions, and all of that's going to be online. So there will be a drop-down, an application with a drop-down menu where you can select the board you're applying for, some information about your district, your demographics, why you want to be on that board. So to make the process a little easier, especially for some of the other boards that don't have the ability to issue licenses. And the hopper of the process, I started with the licensing board because the charter did say within 15 days of taking office, I had to have an appointment for that board. So I'm going through the list and checking them off, and the planning board Came up earlier because of necessity, and we lost a member and a number member, one other member, their appointment expires soon, and you know, wanted to step down. So that is why I have two positions available on the planning board.
So, and people, if they're still in their positions and their term expires June 30th, you could kind of, you know, in a blanket way, say, you know, stay on that board, keep doing what you're doing,
right,
and then make a decision about appointments.
Absolutely.
Sometime in the future.
And one of the things, and as I said, I certainly want to keep people who want to be involved and engaged on their boards. If they have vacancies on their boards, I want to fill those seats, and especially with fill those seats with people that may not have been represented on the board before, people across the city. So think about geographically, where do your members live? Are they ethnically and culturally diverse? So those are the kinds of things that I'm looking and fill the empty seats with new applicants. But if you're currently serving on a board and wish to continue, I'm more than likely going to reappoint people to those positions, especially, like, say, for example, the boards that do not have the ability to grant licenses. So, you know, I would say, for example, the Cultural Arts Council, the Council on Aging, you know, those are the places, the Human Relations Commission, you know, those are the boards that will have more of that process of, will fill those open seats, yeah, that are available.
You recently appointed, or the council did, a task force to look into the short-term rentals and Airbnb after that big party and fatal accident and other things. Are there issues that you, or regulations you'd support in your mind at this point? Or?
Well, you know, I think it's important to get all of the information, as much of the information as we possibly can, and how Airbnb is operated, or similar types of short-term rental services have operated in our community. Whether people are renting out a room to a college student, you know, does that impact that? So I think it's important to get as much information as we possibly can before making a broad brushing ordinance or to that effect, because this was about being able to maintain a residence in a way that we know that it hasn't been appropriate, and also what are those checks and balances that we can do to make sure that doesn't happen? Are there some things that you know, our police department or inspectional services know about certain properties and the complaints about them? What do we know? And you know, and I don't think this is a rampant situation in Framingham. I think in many ways it was quite unfortunate that a police officer was hurt in this situation. But I also, not only a police officer, but another person was also hurt as well. I think we have to be much more vigilant about what we're doing in our community. So before we jump the gun, let's get as much information as we possibly can, and so we can make informed decisions.
Yes, I misspoke. Nobody died on that one.
Died, but a couple. Right. This is the incident a couple of months ago.
Yes.
A lot of college kids apparently had a rented Airbnb space. Police came, called for backup, and there was an accident while an off-duty officer was responding to that scene, and that kind of prompted this look at Airbnb. I'm curious, have you ever stayed at an Airbnb?
You know, I have not, but I know people that have, and they've had a very pleasant experience, but I've also heard of people that had a very unpleasant experience. It wasn't what they had anticipated. So it's a catch-22 in some cases, but, you know, and once again, you're not willing to paint all, you know, short-term rentals with the same cloth, but it prompts us to have much more checks and balances on the process.
In a similar vein, the City Council has put together another ad hoc group that's looking at what to do with the issue of recreational marijuana in the city. I'm not sure if I don't think they've presented any recommendations yet or finalized their recommendations, but it sounds like there's some appetite for maybe putting a moratorium in place. And I wonder if you have any thoughts as to whether that's the right direction to go.
Well, the one thing that is a bit daunting for us as a community is that the regulations from the state, it's a moving target, and they once again have just changed. So, you know, and instead of redlining them in the document, we sort of have to go back and re-review the whole document to see and do a cross comparison of what's new, what's out, what's changed, and it really does make the process a little more challenging. You know, I certainly want to honor the spirit of the voters, but I also want to make sure that we have the proper information to make good decisions for Framingham and giving time to do that. And so, you know, I'm interested to see what the task force will come up with and some of their recommendations. But, you know, I'm keeping an open mind about it, and whether it be a short moratorium or that there is a way that we can proceed ahead. So, and figure it out for ourselves as a community.
So if the council looks at this and decides that, you know, we need to take a pause and moratorium is the right way to go, they hand that to you, you would be willing to sign a moratorium or?
Well, at this point in stage, I'll take it under advisement. And certainly, you know, and I will, because the good part of this is that I have a staff member that is on the team, and also our legal counsel, our city solicitor, is on the team too. So I know they will make a recommendation, you know, to me as well. So
Who is your staff member on the team?
Her name is Jaquetta Van Sant. So she's on the team.
So they're still meeting, yes. I guess, you know, weekly or semi-regularly to talk about it?
Yes, they are. And reviewing the regulations and working closely with the city solicitor. So everybody's on board, the team. And then also we have people in the community that's also on the task force, the health department. So it's a well-rounded team of people.
Yeah. Do you hear a lot from people who are worried about, you know, a pot shop opening up down the street from them? Or, you know, I got the sense maybe there wasn't a ton of public outcry about the you know, negative effects of having this come into the city. But do you hear about that from people?
Periodically, I certainly have been at council meetings where the subject has come up, and people during public comment period, they will voice their opinions pro or against. And it's something to consider. I mean, certainly thinking about what are our options and whether, you know, people are concerned about, you know, the process or, you know, what does this mean for our community in the long haul. So you listen with an open mind, but you also are conscious of, you know, what we voted for a few years ago too. So, you know, trying to be balanced in it.
One of the major issues that came up during the campaign is revitalizing the downtown, and one of the obstacles seems to be the parking situation. Do you have any thoughts on how to address that? Is it still under study?
Well, that's a good one also for the Traffic Commission and looking at parking, because, you know, the reality is we have become very automobile dependent. And whereas, you know, years ago, one family had perhaps one car. And if you had a car, now, you know, a family of four if everybody's of driving age, everybody has their own car. So, you know, the volume of automobiles on the roadways has increased exponentially. And so we have to start to think very creatively about our transportation in our community. You know, do we need to expand our bus service? Do we need to rely more on public transportation? Do we need to rely on bicycles, or ride shares? Those kinds of options that we haven't given much thought to in Framingham, that we might need to consider to decrease the number of vehicles that are on the road right now.
So one instigating factor for this conversation is that at 75 Concord Street, we have this big apartment building that's coming in. They broke ground on it maybe a month ago. And Tuesday is their, like, official, you know, yes, groundbreaking ceremony for this thing. But they, you know, had to get rid of some of the on-street parking at 75 Concord Street. So I think that caught some people by surprise. And, you know, there are some people who used to park down there who kind of look around saying, where do I park my car? Has there been any resolution to that? Or, I mean, has the city suggested anything for people like that?
There hasn't been a complete resolution. I mean, granted, a couple blocks away off of Concord Street, there's the Pearl Street garage that is there available for parking. Yes, it's a couple of blocks walk for someone. Thinking about other options in the downtown, and you know, and looking at you know property owners that might be willing to share some space, or you know, on a periodic basis. So this is one thing that definitely has to be looked at, especially during the construction phase of 75 Concord Street. And I think this was another situation where we got very spoiled and used to parking on this property that, you know, probably about 45, 50 parking spaces that are is now, you know, which was private property, but, you know, we got kind of used to having it, and we don't anymore. So it's really trying to think outside the box on this one as far as parking. You know, are there those options that we can consider going up, having parking lots that have, you know, expandable parking that rises, similar to what you would see in an urban environment like New York City, where, you know, you actually have parking lots that, you know, will park cars in tandem and go up with them. So that is something that we may need to consider, you know, or perhaps someone that owns a lot would consider.
Yeah. Have you had conversations with people about that? I can think of a gentleman who owns quite a lot of things downtown. Who maybe
I think you and I both are thinking of that same gentleman here, yeah. And I've kind of broached the subject. I have. We're in that early stage of broaching the subject. That you know, could you give some consideration to this?
So. Yeah, this is for listeners who don't know. There's Vios Theodorakis, a Framingham guy who owns a tremendous amount of real estate. He's proposed some major projects downtown. But do you think, I mean, is he open to doing a parking garage somewhere? Or?
Well, you know, I would think if the price was right, or if he could see it as a feasible thing, you know, financially, it may be something that he would consider. You know, I'm hopeful. And looking at some various options, you know, I know he wants to see downtown Framingham grow. He wants to see it prosper. And you know, and you have to say, someone who has invested in downtown, you know, that he's willing to work very closely with the city. So I feel positive about that.
Yeah. I wanted to ask about, I know we're getting down near the end of our time here, but this groundbreaking ceremony on Tuesday for Alta Union House, which is the new name for this project. I was curious, did they consult the city Wood Partners about calling it Alta Union House?
Yeah, I'm not even sure because, of course, a lot of this was in the hopper beforehand, you know, and I'm not sure the origins of that name.
I was kind of curious not to you know make any comment on the name one way or the other.
Right.
Just I saw it in my email inbox a couple of days ago and said, "Oh, Alta Union House."
Yes,
but this has got to be an exciting moment for the city, for you as the mayor, to see, you know, a pretty big piece of development starting up.
Well, I am extremely hopeful for downtown Framingham. And when you look at the groundbreaking of this new transit-oriented housing that will go here along, we'll have some parking and some mixed use. I'm hoping this will be the driving factor to continue the growth downtown, to build opportunities for people to start businesses in downtown. And because I truly believe that Framingham will be a place that can people say, Friday night, what are you doing? I'm going downtown Framingham. That's what I hope for.
I have a kind of a final question here. So you're ending your first quarter as mayor, and I'm just wondering, what did you experience that was unexpected and was the most pleasant?
Oh, boy. Unexpected. Well, as we know about those snowstorms, but I have to say, as mayor, the amount of paperwork that I have to sign on a regular basis, I mean, I did not anticipate all of that. The thing that has been absolutely terrific is the positive support of this community. Whether I'm in the grocery store or whether I'm sitting in a coffee shop and I try to be very visible in the community, people want to come up to me and say, you know, congratulations and thank you, or want to offer a word of encouragement. And that really fuels me. And so I think it's been terrific getting to know the team that works with me in the municipal building. They're a wonderful group of people, and building those relationships have been great. So it's been a good couple of months. It's definitely been good.
Is there a common thread to what people are asking you for or commenting to you about?
The common thread is, I would have to say, once again, dealing with some of our blighted properties and traffic. I mean, those are the two subjects that come up most often. And a large part of that is tied to, you know, whether we're going to revitalize Knobscot or Mount Wade or the lumber yard, and what will we do with these villages, and how will we build the capacity to grow them and make them much more usable in our community. But in the meantime, also mitigating some of the traffic, too. So, it's a tall order, but there are some options that we can definitely look at and think outside the box on this one.
Well, I'd like to thank you so much for making time in your schedule for us, Madam Mayor.
Thank you so much for having me, and I look forward to coming back again.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Daily News Podcast, Making a City. You can find the Daily News Podcast in the Apple App Store and on Google Play, and on the Metro West Daily News and the Milford Daily News websites. Thank you to Jim Patadine for producing this episode. Be sure to listen to the Daily News Podcast on Tuesday with host Caitlin Kelleher, and on Friday when we do the weekly news roundup. Thank you for listening, and I hope you'll join us again next week.